Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen, here with Life Coach Cindy Chavez, and this is your daily dose of happy. We're so happy you decided to join us today, and we're in the middle of our recording week, and I was just telling Cindy before the show, I was so thrilled because the repairs that I've been making to the Law of Attraction today, LOA Today app, are done. And yay! I think I've got everything fixed. I mean, there may be one issue that I'm not sure about because the report that I got from a listener was a little vague. So I'm kind of hoping that the repairs I did fixed that one as well. But I think we got them. I think that they're fixed. So if you've been holding off on using the app to listen to the episodes, don't do that anymore. Try it out. See if it's working the way you expect it to. If you find that there's a problem still, use the question form. There's a little form under the goodies section to send in your question, or actually in that case, a repair request saying, well, it's not supposed to be doing this. It's doing that instead. Give me as much detail as you can if you have something like that. But by the same token, if you find that it wasn't working well before and it is working now, send me a note to say that too. I want to know that as well.
We just like to get notes, right?
We do. I mean, who doesn't like getting mail? I mean, let's be perfectly honest. When it's fun mail, and it's always fun because all of our listeners send in great, great messages.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Agree.
Yeah, it's good
yes,
stuff.
Yes.
And in fact, we got a message about a podcast that we did recently in which Amy, who sent in the message, was kind of empathizing with me that she's in the same boat that I am because I talked about how I had discovered the Law of Attraction later on in life. So here's what she had to say. She says, on a fairly recent podcast, I don't remember which one, you were talking about how you came to LOA later in life. I wanted to thank you for sharing because that is me as well. A very similar background, it seems. Since I am learning all this later in life, I feel like I missed the boat. I now constantly keep telling myself that the past is the past and try to get past the old regrets. And I keep LOAing daily. Your podcast has been super helpful. So, well, I'm glad it's been helpful, Amy. That's really great.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. We also, Amy and I exchanged emails after she sent that in. And like I pointed out to her, we only have now anyway, so it doesn't really matter where in life we match up to it because
right.
There's only now. There never was anything but now. It's the only thing that we have. But it's a good point because it's very easy to feel like, you know, you hear about this stuff. I didn't hear about it until I was in my early 50s. And I was thinking, wow, boy, I wish I had known this when I was in my 20s. My life would have been entirely different. But by the same token, would I have traded it? I'm not sure that I would have. I mean, I don't want to go through again a lot of the stuff that I went through. But, you know, but my goodness, the stuff that I learned from it was really, really big. So I don't think I really could trade any of it in. So what would I do differently? I don't really know there is anything.
Yeah, I know. I'm thinking about that too. And I'm thinking, well, I was probably in my mid 30s. And I probably had the same thought. Oh, I wish I would have known about this when I was younger. Then I've also had the thought, oh, I wish I would have known about this when my kids were really young.
Oh, yeah.
Right? But the truth is, we find what we find when we find it. And it's always the right time, right? Like one of my favorite affirmations, it actually is from Louise Hay. It was, you know, I'm in the right place at the right time doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Good one.
How do I know? Because I'm here.
Yes.
Right? Because if you think about it, if you're not happy with the way things are and you're resisting the way things are, then you're resisting reality. You're pushing against what is, and that's a pretty big thing to push against.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided that everything I've found in my life, you know, belief systems that I've found, people that I've found, the talents that I've found, interests that I've found, I've found them all at the right time.
That's a good way to look at it.
And
I like that.
As somebody who got married late in life, right? I mean, I got married to the love of my life 2 years ago. So I was 56 when I got married.
Mm-hmm.
And we both have said, it's really easy to want to say, oh, why didn't we find each other earlier in life? But we also recognize that if you change one thing, you change everything.
Right.
Right. Yes. So neither one of us wish that, you know, things would have been different because things were perfect the way they are.
I remember Louise and I had a very much the same conversation when we first met. We've been married 21 years now, but almost from day one, from the point where we realized this was going to be a long-term relationship, we began kind of second guessing, like, well, why couldn't have we met earlier? Because we married when I was 42, she was 45, and she didn't even hesitate, really. She didn't miss a beat. She said, you wouldn't have stayed around if you had met me 20 years ago. You would have turned and run in the opposite direction because I still had work to do on myself. And then when she said that, I had to think back and say, yeah, it's probably the same thing for me too, actually. If she had met me 20 years before, she probably wouldn't have even noticed me despite my height because I was such a wallflower. I would just kind of disappear into the background. So she wouldn't have even seen me just because I would not allow myself to be front and center of anything. Yeah. So it still couldn't work.
it's so great what you said. It's like all we really have is now anyway. Mm. So if we would have found, let's say, law of attraction sooner, maybe that idea is because we think, you know, we would have created something different for ourselves than what we have unconsciously created before we knew we could be more conscious about our creation. But really, like you said, all we have is now anyway. Like all of that would be in the past regardless.
Right. It's true.
You know, so we have now, and time isn't linear. There's that idea as well.
By the way, I can say that I was exposed to some of the concepts that are involved in this when I was in my early 20s, but the way it was presented to me didn't make any sense to me, and I didn't know how to apply it because they didn't really teach you how to apply it, and so I just kind of wrote it off as a bunch of nonsense because I couldn't make anything out of that.
What context were you presented any of this in?
This was when I got hired. I was living out on the West Coast in Oregon, in the Northwest. I lived there for about a year, and I got hired by a company that was selling a form of insurance policy door to door. And so I was basically going out to sell this stuff. And they took us to, they basically trained us in this super large conference, like a meeting center. Kind of like an Amway gathering, you know, where you have this huge audience and people are up on stage and they're picking your vibe up and they're juicing you up with all kinds of enthusiasm to send you out there and sell to the world. Yeah, pep rally, exactly.
Right, yeah.
And they gave us a book to read by W. Clement Stone, who was the great influence to Jack Canfield, who wrote the Chicken Soup for the Soul series. In fact, Stone was the founder of the company, so he was directly involved in that sense. And it all sounded good, except that there were large chunks missing. And so I couldn't figure out. I remember going out my first day to actually sell after that, totally terrified out of my mind, out of my gourd. And I actually made a few sales haltingly, much to my amazement. Never did make much in the way of sales after that because my confidence level was never really strong and it just kind of plummeted after that. So you can just imagine how my negative self-talk was just going off the charts, which is exactly what happened. And so you can see how that would pretty quickly spiral out of control and not really do well. I mean, the amazing thing is I stuck out with that company for about 8 months and actually made some money during that time, but it was not fun and it was not not a great breakthrough in life or anything like that. So I kind of walked away from it thinking, well, it all sounds good, but it's a bunch of nonsense. It didn't actually work. And I kind of held on to that belief system for quite some time. Into the 90s, into the early 2000s, my sister became involved in spiritual stuff, and she tried to bring me in, and I just wasn't having it because I'd had that prior experience. Plus my experience growing up with the Christian church, and I'd gone through a whole bunch of stuff there. So I had like a definite negative vibe going toward all this stuff. It wasn't until The Secret came out and 2008 hit, the financial crisis, and my business got completely wiped out and I was desperately depressed, that I gave it another shot. And this time it started to resonate for the first time. And it still didn't make all the sense in the world. There were gaps in the way The Secret was presented, but at least it got my attention. But I look back and I say, you know, it was presented to me and it still didn't do anything for me because I didn't get it. You have to be in a place of reception. That's my point. You have to be willing to receive this. Today, there are, you know, we could all think of numerous people in our lives who could benefit from this, except they're not ready to hear it. And they're not ready to consider it and to work through it and to try it and to apply it. I mean, you have to have a certain commitment level to do that. And a lot of people just aren't there. You know, if you're not there, what good is having the information?
You know, it's so interesting because you just told two stories and there was a parallel, right? It's like, you know, Louise said, oh gosh, if you would have met me 20 years ago,
yes,
you ran the other way, right? And it's like you were presented with this, you know, 20 years ago and you ran the other way, right?
I ran away.
Kind of thing. The reason why I was asking you about the context is because when you were saying that you had been exposed to some of this, you know, earlier in your life, but it just didn't really stick, you know, wasn't the right time, I thought to myself, oh yeah, I was exposed to a lot of these kind of teachings. And the reason why I asked you the context is because my context was also in sales.
Oh, okay.
And I did not have I actually had a different response to it, although I had the same sort of experience in that it was sort of half-baked and not, you know, not right, all there. But I remember having a couple of sales managers that were very successful, and they weren't just successful, you know, like, oh, they sold a lot and they made a lot of money. That was true also, but they were very inspiring, and their stories were inspiring, and they're the ones that had a lot of things to say that would definitely fit into this frame, right? And I remember one of them talking about money, basically about money beliefs and about the way, I remember one thing they said that was so interesting at the time. It was kind of like, oh my goodness. I had this kind of aha moment, but they were like, think about watching movies and how often the richest person in the movie is the villain,
mm-hmm,
or the bad
true
guy or the real, you know, bleep, bleep, right? It's like, and I thought, huh, that's kind of true. And then every time I watched a movie after that, that's the frame I was watching it through. And I would be like, sure enough, they're portraying. And, you know, her whole point was that some of us have been even subconsciously through books we've read, through movies we've watched that are fiction. I mean, these are stories, but we've still got this idea that like people with money are bad people. People with money are jerks. And so then we get a belief system in ourselves that, well, I don't want to be rich because rich people are terrible, right? So I don't want to be that. And so then we hold wealth and abundance and money away from us because we can't reconcile those two things. And I know that's another thought with sometimes people may not think that rich people are bad, but they might think that you can't be spiritual and also be wealthy. Right. And so they'll like, well, I don't want to be wealthy because I'm spiritual. And so that's kind of that's probably the first place that I heard ideas like that. Ideas that it was possible for us to have a belief system that was ingrained in us from maybe a younger age that was kind of calling the shots in our life unconsciously. And that was like being an unconscious creator, you know, and not realizing that we have these certain beliefs that were informing our decisions and our behavior and our reality. And so looking back, I say, yeah, I did hear about that. And I thought it was interesting. It might have been the thing that actually got me interested in the whole, you know, the whole journey of learning all of this kind of thing. Because you mentioned Jack Canfield and Stone, right? And one of the books that's out there that's so big in sales circles and business circles is the classic Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich.
Absolutely, yep.
And then there's also Carnegie's book, was it How to Make Friends and Influence People? And then
Dale
there's
Carnegie,
also
yep,
The Science of Getting Rich. Like all of those books are, you know, decades and decades old, 100 years old or something. And they're classics because they work.
Yeah.
Right? They're classics because people read them and applied what's in them. And so those were the first, probably the first books that I read, and it was all connected to sales. So that's kind of interesting. Yeah. We both had a similar, but still, right. It's like you, if something comes your way and it's not your time to learn it, it's like that whole, when the student is ready, the teacher appears.
Exactly. Yeah.
So if you didn't get it yet, it probably isn't because it wasn't there. It's just because you didn't see it.
Yes, I think that's true. And I can give you another example. You mentioned how we might associate that somebody who's well off is not particularly spiritual. I actually have the opposite. Embedded thought, I guess you could call it. Because at around the time that I was starting to study Napoleon Hill and some of these other teachers, I was also very much aware of American history and the history, American economic history. I've done a lot of reading and studying there. And I was aware of the period in the late 19th century to early 20th century, which is often generically described as the era of the robber barons, Andrew Carnegie, John D. Rockefeller, J.P. Right. Morgan, you know, these types. And the interesting thing about all of them is they were deeply religious men. They were all churchgoers. They were pillars of their church. And they were, by today's standards, they would probably be the equivalent of a conservative evangelical. They were just very deeply devout men who would then go out and just do these things in their workplace that was just mind-blowing and mind-boggling.
I was going to say, but wait, well, we're talking about spiritual people.
Well, no, I mean, because there are many people who are very spiritual who fall into those camps. But by the same token, just because you have a certain kind of religious belief doesn't mean you necessarily apply it a certain way in your life.
Yes, we are seeing that every day, right? Correct.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it comes from all religious beliefs. So it comes from all religious circles. You get that all the time. So for me, and now combine that with the fact that, like I said, I had gone through a whole thing of pulling away from the Christian church when I was in my teens. So I had rather negative associations there. So all I had to do was read that these guys were deeply religious and I was done with them. I
mean, I'm done.
So, you know, once again, it didn't really matter whether they were spiritual or not. I wasn't ready for anything they had to say at all.
Right. That's funny. Well, I always think that I look back and, you know, I think most people that have had a journey of learning new things and different belief systems and, you know, being open to believing or entertaining different ideas, you know, we look back and even without that kind of metaphysical part, even just the part of life in general, we all can look back, you know, and the older we get, the further back we can look and think, oh my goodness, I can't believe I ever, you know, thought this way, or I can't believe I believed a certain thing, or look at this thing I did, or, you know, it's just part of the growth process.
It is. Right? Yes. That's what we're going through, is a growth process.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an ongoing process, but that's what we continue to go through.
Yeah. I remember one time somebody kind of scolded me for, like changing a belief system, and they called me wishy-washy. Because they knew me at one point when I, you know, believed a certain thing, and then now I believe something different. And I said, wishy-washy. I said, hey, baby, grow or die, you know? I mean,
yeah.
This is just, and they said, oh, is that what it is? Growth? And I said, yes. I mean, that's the way I see it, is that I have no problem being open to new ideas. And you know me, I say this a lot. These days, I don't claim to believe really anything.
Right.
Laugh at the, you know, Robert Anton Wilson once said he didn't believe anything at all, but he had his suspicions, right? I feel like what I say to people about beliefs is I try not to have belief systems. I try to just be willing to entertain possibilities.
Louis D'Souza, who does the Monday Show with me, says that he has opinions, but they change all the time.
Right. Because beliefs, to me, beliefs in some way are all limiting.
Mm.
Right? We often hear about, especially in law of attraction circles, we hear about limiting beliefs. And yes, we all have limiting beliefs, but in some way or another, I feel like almost every belief is a limitation in some way. So
I would say they all are. I don't think there's actually any exception to it. And I think that points to the fact that just because a belief is limiting doesn't mean that that's a bad thing.
Well, so I just rather say, well, I don't really have beliefs. I'm just willing to entertain a lot of different possibilities. To me,
I also like to think of it as I have beliefs, and all my beliefs are limiting, but I'm the one who chooses which limits I'm going to place. It's up to me. Anytime that I say I like something, I'm placing a limit. Every time I say I don't like something, I'm placing a limit. And if I'm doing that consciously, that means I'm using limits to create the life that I want. So I like limits. I think limits are useful. I think they're fabulous. I just don't want to put a limiting belief in front of me that is something that I don't like and don't want, and I keep focusing on it to keep making it true. That's what I'm trying to avoid.
Yeah, well, I think that if you have a limiting, most of those, well, I'm making like air quotes, right? Most of those limiting beliefs are not conscious.
A lot of them aren't, right? Yeah, that's
right.
True.
Because usually once they become conscious, they lose their ability to really limit you because suddenly you're conscious of it. And it's like, oh, wow, no, don't want to be limited that way.
No, so that's true.
Yeah. There's an idea. There's a Buddhist cone that says the mind that sees limitation is the limitation.
Mm. Yeah.
So we all want to have this like limitless, you know, but the truth is we're humans and we always want to keep ourselves safe. So we create limitations to keep ourselves safe. That's all that is. That's a seatbelt.
It is, yeah. Well, it's also, it's kind of a Kickstarter too, because it's making me think about something again that I've been thinking about the last few days. Cause I was kind of pondering the idea, we've talked about it before, about how, some people say, well, it's better to give than to receive. And yet, by the same token, we've talked about how important it is to be willing to receive and able to receive. Somebody offers you, I'll take the check. You don't fight them for the check. You say thank you, because it's good to be in a receiving mode. It's good to develop that side. But it's also good to give. And I kept going back and forth about that, giving, receiving. And it finally clicked. It finally dawned on me. They really go hand in hand. It really doesn't pay to be only a giver or only a receiver. In fact, I think for myself, my goal is to always be giving as I'm receiving. It make it a continuous connection, like an electrical circuit, so that you have the giving pulse going out this part of the wire and the receiving pulse coming out on that part of the wire.
It's a full connection. Full circuit. Yeah.
So when I think about it that way, now we're entering the holiday period, which is mostly dominated by Christmas, but other religions also have stuff going on. Judaism, of course, with Hanukkah, there's Kwanzaa. Islam has all kinds of religious holidays every single month of the year, so December is no exception there. But the fact is, this is like the holiday season for a large chunk of the world. And one of the most common questions you get, particularly when you're a kid, but even into adult years, is what do you want for Christmas?
Yeah.
Which is about receiving. And I know in the past, I would often say, well, actually, I'm looking forward to giving. But it began to occur to me, what we really should be thinking about is, or at least what I feel I should be thinking about, is what do I want to give and what do I want to receive? In other words, what's the entire package look like?
Yeah.
Because when I look at it that way, now I'm actually using all of my ability. I'm not using part of it. And I'm not limiting myself in ways that I don't necessarily want to be limited. Talk about limiting beliefs. So I was curious to see what you thought about that.
Well, I think that there can't be a giver without a receiver.
True.
And that, you know, that whole idea, I think we talked about this and it kind of, I hadn't thought about it this way before, but the whole idea about being taught, you know, it's better to give than to receive. We've all heard that.
Oh, yeah.
I really think that what that means is that the experience of giving feels better. I think that that's what it really meant. In other words, when you give a gift to someone, I know, for instance, this past Thanksgiving, because we're in, you know, quarantine, we did not have family around. We connected with them through FaceTiming and, you know,
right.
and that way. And so, but the family members, the kids that were in town, we had them come by and we gave them a Thanksgiving dinner, like to go. We made this mm-hmm. huge spread to go.
Nice.
And they've been working really, really hard. And I thought, you know what? They're not even going to have time to put together a meal for themselves. So I felt really good about doing it. And when they came over, you know, we talked for a few minutes, you know, at a distance, but they received our package with so much joy. They were so happy and they sent us a message back and said, this was so delicious. We enjoyed this so much. And I had so much joy in the giving of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that sense, I could say, oh, wow, it's better to give, like the high that you get from giving, right? Like the enjoyment that you give it could be considered even better, but I don't think it means that morally it's better. Or that, you know, it's a better action on your part than receiving. But I think that's how we've taken it sometimes. And so I facilitate some gift circles with people, and there's a section where you say what you'd like to receive. And then there's another round where you say what you'd like to give other people. And it's always easier for the people to do the giving round. Like receiving is harder for most people than giving. But the way I look at it is you need both. They're two sides of the same coin. You can't receive something without someone giving, and you can't give if there's no receiver. So it's really
That's
important.
Right.
Like when you were saying that, the full circuit of it, I was thinking about right brain and left brain.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like our right brain and our left brain do different things. So I used to be a Hebrew tutor, so I would be getting kids ready to recite all the Hebrew that they needed to know for their bar or bat mitzvah. And you can speak those things or you can sing them or chant them. And I would always have them sing. Why? Because you're reading and you're using your left brain and you're singing. So you're using your right brain. So it's like full brain power. I mean, that's why commercials have jingles.
True. Yeah.
Right? Because we want the information, but we also want to use the part of the brain that creates beauty and art and, you know, things that are more ethereal. So we're using all of our brain. And I kind of feel like that with your idea of giving and receiving. It's like a full experience.
Well, it sticks better too, doesn't it? Well, I mean, you mentioned combining the spoken word with music.
Yeah.
Michelle Blood was a guest on the show about 4 or 5 months ago. And she, back in the 80s, early 90s, she went through a whole life-changing experience. I won't go through the whole story, but the bottom line is she ended up in the hospital having to recover. And while she was in the hospital, she wanted to do something to kind of move her recovery along. She had been a singer in a rock and roll band, and so she wanted to do something with music. And so she'd heard about affirmations, and so she got a hold of an old cassette tape recorder, and she recorded into it a bunch of affirmations, and then she started composing some tunes to go with it, and she turned them into singing affirmations. That actually became a career for her. She recorded these, became very, very popular. She was in demand with all the great gurus. She was on with like Bob Proctor and all the top LOA gurus. She made a fortune doing it, and all because she accidentally discovered the tremendous power of combining affirmation and music into one thing, because it sticks better. Like you said, it sticks in the conscious and the subconscious mind very effectively. That's why jingles were invented. So that's what I was thinking about when you mentioned that. Yeah
using your whole brain instead of just half your brain.
Right.
All of it. So it's a lot more power. But I think that's true of giving and receiving, is many of us have an easier time with giving. And you know, that's a good thing that we are generous and that we are willing to give. And if we will just now exercise our ability to receive, not in place of giving, but in addition to, then we, it's a very vulnerable thing sometimes, but if you can sit with it, it gets easier. And when it's easier for you to receive, more good things can flow in. Because you're not blocking them and resisting them.
That's true. Now, there's also a flip side to all this, besides the two sides of the same coin, the giving and the receiving stuff, there's also that we're mostly talking at this point about stuff that we like, but there's also stuff that we don't like. And I want to bring that in through a comment that Nasha made in the live stream. She asked a question, and then she and Jeffrey have actually been going back and forth about it, but I wanted to bring it into this conversation because I think it actually ties in. She says, how can one let go of insults when people shout, scream, and insult you? She says, it's killing when once one has to even give a food. Honestly, I'm flat broke. I'm not sure what that part didn't quite come through right. But they say, we give you food. That doesn't that mean that 11 years in a row? Whoa, I'm not quite sure what that's about. Sorry.
Let's just talk about when people are insulting you.
Yes. Because that's kind of the flip side. I mean, one is about giving and receiving. The other side is what do you do when you don't want to receive something? And what do you do when someone tries to give you something you don't want?
Right. You don't have to receive it, first of all. And that is one way mentally that you can deal with it, is just by recognizing, whether you verbalize it to them or not, it's just, I just don't receive that. Mm-hmm. Not receiving that. Because when someone insults you, that's all about them. That's their perspective. Those are their thoughts. Those are their words that, you know, it has nothing to do with you. But the way that you can think about it is, first ask yourself if it's a mirror of your self-talk.
Oh, God, yes.
Right? Yeah. In that way, it could have something to do with you. Not that you deserve it, or not that any of it's true, but that sometimes our self-talk is saying those things, and it's being reflected verbally to us by someone outside of ourself. And so it's
we can learn the self-talk from somebody else. I mean, it's again a completed circuit. You know, sure. They say something, we say it to ourselves,
it just becomes
ongoing.
Right. So, you know, it's kind of funny. Whenever I have a thought that is not something I want to be thinking, right? I'll give you an example. Someone's supposed to be on their way to me, and they're late, and maybe they're never late. And I've texted them, and they're not texting back. So I have a thought come into my head. It's like, maybe they got in an accident, right? Mm-hmm. As soon as I have a thought like that, I literally always say out loud, no. And I also see the words no. Like, I see the words no in my head. I go, no. I'm making a conscious decision that no, I'm not going to entertain that idea. Right? And the same way, if someone insults me, someone says something, you know, that's mean to me or something, or tells me that I am something, right? Somebody told me, it was, of course, in a terrible social media post that someone was disagreeing with me politically, and they said that I was condescending. And first of all, I'm willing to look and see what I said and see if I was being condescending, right? Mm-hmm. But I was not. And so I said, no, I'm not. That seems really simple, but words are very powerful. Mm. And the story that you tell yourself is very powerful. So when someone throws a negative story at you about you, you know, first, yes, it's always good to check ourselves and think, oh gosh, am I doing something that appears that way? But when this is something that happens over time and it's the same person or something, if it's abusive, because that's abusive, right?
Sure.
If the same person in your life is throwing insults at you all the time, it's abusive. And so that's when you make the decision that you get to define who you are. You get to define, not them. They don't get to define. They can have their opinion of you.
Sure. Yeah.
Right? So,
but their opinion of you doesn't have to be control what your opinion of you is.
Right.
And that's really the key point.
So someone can describe me and say, I'm a woman and my name is Cindy and I'm a coach and I do a podcast. And, you know, and those are all true things because they're facts. They're not judgments. But when someone says that I'm condescending and I'm high-minded or whatever, now those are judgments. And I get to decide. They can think it, and their opinion of me is not any of my business. Now, that's hard to swallow for some people, to say, okay, you can think whatever you want about me, because I can't control that. But it's not okay for you to say that to me, and it's not true, because I get to define who I am. And I'm not condescending. I'm very understanding, and I'm compassionate, and I'm here having a discussion with you because I care about what you think, right? So, no. So I just say, if you, you know, the reason why certain good things don't come into our life is because we resist them, right? We resist them and they stay away. So I'm saying when someone's insulting you or abusing you, resist. Resist it.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd describe it as resist, but I would certainly, I don't think, I think it is resist. I think it is, yeah, I think it is turning it down, declining. Like, yeah, no thank you.
Exactly.
Not interested. You know? Right. Because resistance actually, to me, that, there's like an effort that goes behind resistance. And I've got to keep this going. I got to keep that wall up.
Right.
But when I'm saying no, I mean, that just ends it in my mind.
You don't want to effort over it.
It's done. Right.
Right. Yeah. You just want to say no, thank you. Yeah, no, thank you. You can keep that to yourself. You can just move along. Nothing to see here.
And we've also had experiences where, you know, we say to somebody, no, thank you, and they just keep going. But the funny thing is, and I found this for myself, you tell me if you think it's true for yourself, but I found that because of the work I've done on myself, when they keep going, their voice starts to get quiet. I mean, the mouth is moving. I can hear their sound coming out, but it doesn't register anymore.
Kind of like that conscious decision that I'm just not, I'm not interested. You know, when you started doing the mirror work and you said that your self-talk was like, it's still there, but it's kind of like a TV that's on real low in the other room, and I don't really care what's on, so I'm not even interested, so I don't really even pay attention.
Exactly.
It's kind of like that. Yeah. And so it's, you don't have to receive someone else's opinion of you if you don't want to.
In fact, what happens over time, I think, from my, now this is my experience again, the more that I worked on building myself up, increasing my own self-esteem, loving myself more, appreciating myself more, and doing it consciously in front of the mirror, like you said, mirror work, the more that I did that, and the more that, I ran into a lot fewer people who treated me the way we've been discussing. And on those occasions where I did run into somebody like that, literally what happens is I hear them for the first 10 seconds or whatever it is. I realize where they're going with it. I realize they're going to try to tear me down. And all of a sudden, I can't hear them anymore. I'm hearing everything else that's going on around them. And so I'll look away from them. And of course, they're trying to do whatever they can to get my attention back because I'm not giving them the attention. That's what they were there for. They really wanted to get the energy of my attention. So they're fighting for that. And I'm just kind of not interested. And I stop paying attention, and I'm looking. I may pick up a book. I'm reading the book, like giving them no attention whatsoever. And then they basically have three choices at that point. They can continue to try to up the ante and, you know, get my face or whatever it takes to get my response to whatever drudge they're trying to throw on me, you know, whatever they're trying to dredge up. They can give up and go away, or they can change their tune. But there aren't any other options than those three. It's either up the ante, go away, or change your tune. That's it. And interestingly enough, they give up on the first one really quickly. They choose one of the other two.
Right. And, you know, sometimes when you start creating boundaries and kind of standing up for yourself and saying no, like, no, that's not true. That's not who I am. Mm-hmm. No, I don't accept that. Like you said, sometimes they just go away. They just stop.
They do.
It's not effective. Sometimes it's projection, you know, and what they're saying to you is actually what they're guilty of themselves. But I just think that if we will double check to make sure that they're not reflecting back our self-talk.
Yes. Very
important.
And
then create a different self-talk story, you know, if they are or not, like create a story that tells the story you want it to about yourself and stick with that. And mirror work is fantastic for that. And you will see the reflections that come back at you from other people start to change when you change.
It's really weird too.
right? It really
When it first happens, it's like, whoa, what happened? Are you the same person I knew yesterday?
Right? I've asked several people in the last week because of what they've brought to me in a coaching session. I've said, I'm going to ask you a question. Okay. I said, in your life in general, with your friends, your family, your spouse, you know, people around you, when people ask you what you want, do you defer to them? Mm. You say, oh, I don't care. Let's do what you want. I don't care. And they both said, one of them said, I do that sometimes. The other one said, I do that all the time. Mm-hmm. And so that's a great place to start with starting to be verbal to yourself and others about what you want. And then also about your own story, mirror work, self-talk. There's a guy that wrote a book. I think it was called it was about self-talk, and it had a funny title that was something like, what to say when you talk to yourself or something.
Okay.
And he told this story. I saw him speak years ago. He told this story that if his premise was that if somebody followed you around with a notebook and wrote down everything that you said in 10 days, or for 2 weeks, that if they took the top 10 things that you say all the time, that those would be the like programs that were running you. Well, he started really getting into self-talk, and he had these index cards, I believe, where he would write positive affirmations on them. And he kept adding to them, and he would say them every morning, but it started to get too long. He had too many. It was taking too much time. So he took a tape recorder. This reminds me of your story about the singing affirmations, but these were just recorded. And he started saying affirmations, and he was trying to lose weight. And the affirmations were like about his weight, right? Like, I lose weight easily and I'm in a healthy body, and you know, positive affirmations about his appearance. He put them on a tape recorder, and he would play them in the morning while he was shaving and washing his face and all of that. Well, he had a bathroom that had like a double sink, and his wife would be in there getting ready at the same time. And so he was playing these affirmations of himself saying, I lose weight easily, and I like to exercise, and I eat healthy food, and you know, all these things. They were all around weight loss, and he was losing weight. His wife also lost weight. And yes. She wasn't doing anything different. She was just listening to his affirmation. Right? So we are influenced by, you know, words, sound waves.
Yeah.
So get yourself a good story going and know who you are. Like, whatever it is you want to be, do you want to be honest and compassionate and friendly and outgoing and funny and, you know, whatever list you have of qualities you want, which are definitely not insulting, right? I mean, if I show up and I say, well, you know, you are so kind and compassionate and you crack me up with your sense of humor, like, he doesn't feel insulted. That's not an insult.
Not really.
Right.
It's quite the opposite, actually.
So what you want to do is create a story for yourself like that. And maybe some of those qualities aren't fully developed yet. And that's okay, because you can develop them, right?
Yeah.
And so build that story for yourself about who you are and get it where you can really stand strong in that story. And when someone says you're selfish, you know you're not. There's no part of your brain that says, oh my gosh, you know, am I selfish? Because you know you're not, or whatever it is, whatever insult someone's throwing at you. You just know it's not true. You know, a lot of times, it's really hard because people that we care about, if they insult us, it feels so much worse.
Yes.
If I'm walking down the street and somebody drives by in a car and yells some insult at me, I might just crack up laughing because it's like, what was that about? I don't know that person. But when someone that I care about and someone who my brain thinks is supposed to care about me because they're a relative or I've done something kind for them or whatever, when that person insults me, it feels much worse. You're just human, right? That's just a human thing. We don't like to be insulted.
It's true.
But as long as you build your own, you know, confidence in who you are, those insults won't sting as much.
It does raise the question, though, how do you build it up? because we really haven't touched on that part a lot. But, well, we do overall in the podcast, but I mean, today's episode, we haven't touched on a lot. And probably the best thing to do is to do what we do with an affirmation. You just keep repeating it. A belief is a thought that you think over and over again. So you keep repeating it. Mirror work in that mirror every day. In fact, what I found happened, you'll remember when I told the story the first time, my first day lasted, 5 seconds, the second day, 10 seconds and so forth. But after a few days of it, I started to get into the flow of it. And after about, 15, 20 days, I was starting to kind of rely on it. Like I needed that dose. We have your daily dose of happy here on the show. Well, I have my daily dose of mirror work. Yeah. And I found that my soul was hungry for what it was that I was giving to it because I've been denying it to myself for so long. Mm-hmm. So I took advantage of it and I really kept feeding that desire. And the more that I fed it, the more the belief built. And I think that's really the pattern. It isn't just that a belief is a thought that we think over and over again. It's a belief is a thought that we think over and over again that we internalize, that we say, yes, that's for me. Yes, I choose that one. That's where the strongest beliefs come from. It's not like it's impossible to believe something that you don't like. I mean, we certainly are all capable of doing that. But my point is when it's something that really registers, that resonates, that feels good, it's like you can't get, it almost becomes like an addiction. It becomes so big. I got to have that every day. And interestingly enough, when you give it to yourself every day, it actually builds you up to the point where all of a sudden what that relative is saying or what that supposed friend is saying that's so nasty, it just doesn't even register after a while. It just goes away.
And I love that, we talked a week or so ago about tolerating things,
mm-hmm.
right? And that when you're tolerating something, you're energetic signature is saying this thing is okay. I'm okay with it. Whatever it is, whether it's behavior of another person or like I said, the burned out porch light, whatever it is.
Yeah.
What message energetically you're sending out, your vibration, if you will, is that I'm okay with this because you're not changing it and you're not resisting it and you're okay with it. And
that's
so
a great point.
It's the same kind of thing that when you change that and start doing something to change it, the reflection will change. So with you talking about mirror work and really needing it, loving it, feeling like, oh, my soul is hungry for this. Like this is really, you are feeding yourself something you need. And when you keep feeding that to yourself, then it starts being reflected back to you from other people and it starts coming to you from outside of yourself. And that's why I say, check yourself. If somebody is consistently being insulting to you, check yourself that that's just not a reflection of your own self-talk. Change the self-talk and that reflection will start to change. But there's that's kind of like the internal work, changing the self-talk. And sometimes there's the external work that also has to be done. And that's the part where you say, this isn't okay for you to speak to me this way. And I don't accept it and I don't receive it because it's not true. So don't mm-hmm. waste your breath.
Yeah, right.
It's not true, right? It's not true. I don't receive that gift. Those two things together, the inner work and the outer work, will cause change to happen.
Oh, it's unavoidable. I mean,
so we've talked about this inner work, outer work, left brain, right brain.
Yeah.
Both sides of the connection and the coin, right? So there's always that duality.
It's more than a duality. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah. Right.
That's really what we're doing, right? When we're building ourselves up by telling ourselves these things that, like I said, my first couple of times, it was so uncomfortable, I couldn't do it for more than 5 seconds. So I didn't really believe it yet.
Right. But that's what I was going to say. Do it till it takes, right? Keep going until you do believe it.
That's right.
It's sort of like when you learn something new, like learn how to play an instrument, you're going to be really terrible at first. Right? Anybody that's had a kid in the house practicing a violin or something, it's like, oh my gosh. It's like, but keep going
mm-hmm.
until it's not awkward, until you know you're good at it, until it comes naturally, right? Just like that, practice and practice, hone that story, keep up with that self-talk until the confidence comes, until you are able to stand in your own identity and not the identity that someone else is trying to put on you.
And when we're dealing with a situation where we're feeling the need to do something like this, but by the same token, we're not really taking the steps that we need to take. And we know we're not, but, you know, there's comfort levels and there's all this other kind of stuff. And we have 100 or 1,000 or 10,000 different ways to justify that we're not actively taking the steps just yet. Yeah, I'm going to do it soon. Anytime now.
Yeah.
When we're in that space, it's hard to imagine that it's going to make any big difference to make that commitment to stick it out a little bit. But, oh my God, I wish there was some way I could go back and tell myself that first day of mirror work, it really does pay off. You sticking with it is the best decision you've made so far, even though you're still so tentative about it, because let me tell you, it's going to pay off. I wish I could do that somewhere.
Well, there sort of was, because when we talked about it the very first time, I was relating to you a Jack Canfield story, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a time frame. And I can't remember if it was 21 days or 30 days. I keep thinking it's 30 days. And so you said, I'm going to do this for 30 days.
Yes,
right?
The mirror work was 30 days on his on the blog post. Yeah.
Right. So it's like, keep going for 30 days. Right? You know, you can take a habit tracker is a wonderful thing. Or, you know, those calendars. You can print one from the internet, just the white calendar with the black lines, just a square for a month, just a 1 month piece of paper that's a month. And then you can take that red marker and every day you do the mirror work, you make that X and an X, and those X's make a chain, right? You don't want to break the chain. You want to put an X on every square and just make a commitment to yourself that you're going to do it for 30 days, even if it feels ridiculous, even if your part of your brain is telling you that all of this is just crap and none of it's true, right? When you say good things about yourself, that gremlin voice comes up and says, that's not true.
I think there's also one other thing that can hold us back that we have to kind of be aware of. And that is, early on especially, we're trying to make changes in that programming that you referred to, because we have those subconscious programs going on,
telling us,
you know, what they've been telling us all along. You know, we're terrible, or you know, our relatives are terrible, or our friends are terrible, or, you know, all this other kind of stuff. The programs haven't stopped playing yet. And because of that, the programs can actually become the way of defeating our ability and our desire to follow through on, say, the mirror exercise or whatever it is that we're doing like that to make a change. And so I think it's important to kind of be what they call mindful, to pay attention to our own self-talk and say, okay, the next time I notice myself talking about how, oh, my relative always treats me in this way, or I never get the best of anything. I'm always third on the list or fifth on the list or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, all that negative stuff we've been telling the stories about, it's important to catch ourselves telling those stories and say, oh, I just did it again. Well, that's all right. I caught it this time. Now let's see, what can I change it to?
Here's a story. Beware of this one. Nothing ever works for me.
Yes.
Because that will be the one, right? That then you say, why am I even doing this? Nothing ever works for me. I've tried this and I've tried that and they didn't work. Doesn't matter. And that's when you say, and you can even say it out loud to yourself, right? Say, it doesn't matter. I'm doing this for 30 days.
It does matter. That's the whole point.
This is going to work. Well, I just may know that thought, you know, that story that you're, it doesn't matter that you're saying that. It doesn't matter that things I've tried before haven't worked. I'm still doing this for 30 days because it's going to work. I'm going to keep going and then keep going. Yeah.
And also take the opportunity to change that story even between mirror work sessions.
Oh, yeah. No, all the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
So the moment that if I've been telling myself the story and I've been getting feedback that my brother has been treating me abominably, by the way, my brother never does that. He's wonderful. But let's say he was treating me really badly. He was saying all these nasty things to me. And of course, therefore, I was telling the story about how my brother continues to tell all these nasty things about me. Well, you know, if I keep telling that story often enough, it doesn't matter how many mirror exercises I do. I'm dominating it with the fact that I keep going back to the story about all these terrible things my brother is doing to me.
Yeah.
So you actually have to make a commitment to stop telling the story and start telling this new story.
You do. That was that whole idea that most of us are just walking around reciting yesterday's news.
Right. Yes.
And that's expecting exactly what things to change. Right?
Yes. So, otherwise known as insanity.
Right. Exactly. So you just have to stop that. Just stop it. And it won't stop right away because you're in the habit of doing it. So like Walt said, you know, you're going to catch it. At first, you're going to catch it after the fact and realize you've been having these thoughts for hours. And then you'll start catching it in the middle of the thoughts and you can correct it. And then you'll start catching it as soon as you start to have those thoughts. And then it'll be before they even form. And then pretty soon you just won't be having those thoughts as much until they're gone. So it's a process. Trust the process and stay with it. Even if for the first week, you know, or the first 10 days, you keep catching it after the fact, that's okay. Keep going. Because eventually you start catching those thoughts while they're happening.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what happens with any habit, any personal habit that you're trying to break. That's the way it always happens, is that it's a gradual process.
That's cool, too, because when you can do it. And when you're actually going through it, I mean, you described how you described one way that it kind of gradually starts to shift. But what actually happens is they all kind of intermesh with each other. It's not that clean cut. It's like, you know, those tapes are quieting down while you're still dealing with trying to keep on top of them. And, oh, this time I caught it. It's like this. It's not the smooth curve. Like you've described before, there's never a smooth curve. It's a jagged curve.
That's right.
And that's what we're constantly dealing with. But it's easier to describe it as a smooth curve. So that's why we call it a smooth curve. But the jagged curve is what really happens. That's what you should expect to happen.
No, it's true. But just keep going. Just give yourself and I think it's really important to give yourself that container of 30 days.
Yes.
Because it's like, you know, your brain will accept it easier when it's not like, this is forever, right? So many times we stop short of making certain decisions because it feels like it's forever. It's like, ooh, right? So if I were to say, hey, do you want to meet twice a week and do whatever, it might be, oh, that's a little much. But if I say, hey, you want to come over next week one time and do, you know, it might be okay, right? So your brain is reluctant to take on things that are etched in stone and last forever. So when you say 30-day container, you're giving yourself that. It's okay, it's 30 days. Anybody can do anything for 30 days. It's like, all right, I'll try it for 30 days. And then see what happens. See how you feel. See how your self-talk has changed. It will change.
It does change. And in fact, what I found happened is I did it, I think, at first for 50 days, which kind of surprised me that I did it that long. Then I stopped for a while. And then I went back to it for quite some time. Then I stopped. And now I've gotten to the point where, well, first of all the tapes that kept playing went silent. I love that. So that was the main goal. I achieved my goal. But then I also found that it was a great way to build energy up when I needed to build energy. So now I just use it selectively. If I wake up and I'm feeling like, I don't really feel it today, oh, time to go in front of the mirror. I got to get myself a little built up. Other days, like today, I woke up, I didn't need it. I was juiced. I was ready to go. So screw the mirror work. Let's go for it. I'm ready. Right. I'm there. Yeah. I'm fine. You know.
But that's because over this course of time, you've built all that confidence in a different story about yourself, right? Where that chatter, that mental chatter isn't there. So that's the process, and that's why, that's the proof in the pudding right there. That's it, the result. It's happened. It's fantastic.
It is fantastic, and this has been a fantastic conversation. I'm really glad that we talked about this, and we tied in a few good concepts, the concept of giving and receiving, and we tied it into what to do in both the positive and the negative side. So I think we covered the gamut. Really good. So thank you very much, Cindy. Appreciate all your insights, as usual. Thank you to Jeffrey and Ashton, our live streamers. We appreciate you as well. We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.